to bring us to our little rest stop for the evening, our intermission, we welcome, and I'll say all three of the storytellers before intermission are newbies to the Next to Normal, so that's great. And Mark completes the trio. Mark Nielsen is a freelance writer, teacher, filmmaker, sculptor, musician, and humorist, originally from Chicago, Illinois. He currently resides in Bloomington with his fiancée, their offspring, and two canine coonhound companions. Mark has worked as a documentary film director and executive, plus a writing, drama, and PE teacher, grade K through college, a mall Santa Claus, a big pharma IT contractor, and most recently, a corporate security supervisor, everywhere from skyscrapers to pumpkin factories. They manufacture pumpkins? All right. To sewage plants to a cannabis cultivation center. There's the tie-in. If you have other ideas on what Mark could do, he is entertaining suggestions. But for now, please join me in welcoming Mark Nielsen.
Thank you. That's David Sanborn. He's going to come up later. I'm just getting my little travel props. They're not snacks, but same difference. Going to make the journey more enjoyable. This is a road trip story with two heroes instead of the usual stories that only have one. Now, the first hero in the story is a world-famous African man. The second hero is just an average kid from Iowa who stepped up in a pinch and really helped me out. And like a lot of good road stories in America, this one also involves a little bit of bumbling and some detours, and especially something like, if you think of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, starring some of my other heroes, Steve Martin and John Candy. You know, I had my own bumbling experiences in multiple methods of destination. Or methods of travel, I should say. In this case, plane came first. I was working about 10 years ago with my ex-wife on putting together a trip in July of 2009 to visit her godmother, who is a citizen of Switzerland. And we hadn't seen her in a number of years. And she's a woman of some means, so she really graciously helped us with a lot of the costs for the trip, especially through Switzerland. And then we were going to eventually continue our trip from Switzerland down into Italy and do that part on our own dime and go from there. So we get on the plane, we go to Zurich, and we start a visit with her Aunt Barbara. And the first few days in Zurich went really well, but no hilarity, no bumbling or anything like that, just good family time and tourism, things like that, which brings us to the train portion. Take a train from Zurich up into the Alps. We're going to go to St. Moritz, and Barbara's going to join us up in St. Moritz, where she's been a number of times. She really likes to travel, so she's going to be our guide, and we were really grateful to have somebody who knew the country so well and had kind of pre-booked certain things or planned certain things for us. So we were glad to be along for the ride. Took the train to St. Moritz, which is a classic Swiss ski town. And when we're there, we decide we're going to take a day trip and go even higher. There's a peak near there called Piz Nair. And we took one of those like big 24-person cable cars up the mountain to the peak of Piz Nair. And the view when we're up there was just stunning, as you would imagine. The actual peak experience that they talk about, right? 360-degree view, green everywhere with lots of snow-capped mountains, even though it's July, because Alps have, in this area have some of the highest peaks in the world. And I don't know, maybe it was the altitude and me being a little woozy, or maybe I was just overwhelmed by all this beauty, or maybe I just had another in 100,000 attention deficit disorder moments, but somehow I managed to lose my credit card on the top of Piz Nair. We didn't even know that this had happened until later on that night when we were back at the hotel and had need of something. Maybe we were going to pay for the meal or something, although often Barbara was offering and maybe had already prearranged something. But found out that I had lost his card, so we make a quick call as best we can to our U.S. Bank cardholder. And they make arrangements to send our card down ahead of us, basically, because we're not going to be in this location very long. They can't send us to where we are. They got to send us to where we're going. To make matters worse, it's the weekends. So we've got to wait 3 days to get to the place where they're sending our card. And they're going to use DHL and send it down to the resort in central Italy that we're eventually bound to. So we get that taken care of. A little stressful, got some rest. Next day, we're getting on a train again. Or trying to, but Mark left his bag back at the hotel. I would have abandoned it except for the fact that my passport was in that bag. So we had to go back and get my bag. We go back as quick as we can. We don't know if we're going to make it or not. Come back. No train. We missed it. So we had to get on a bus. And 3 hours later, just like Steve Martin and John Candy had to do, we're on a bus to try to get down to Lugano, which is the Italian section of Switzerland. A little bit more in the lowlands, heading down towards Italy. Where Barbara had also previously been, but that bus ride was very quiet, let me tell you. We get down to Lugano without any further incidents. We're checking into the hotel that night, and Barbara says something about a little music festival that's going on in town that weekend. It turns out it's not a little music festival at all. It's something called Estival Jazz Lugano 2009. And it's like a big regional, even European-wide event. It's being televised. It's right in the town square. And there are some really big names actually performing at this festival, including David Sanborn, who I mentioned, whose music I walked up to. And after David Sanborn, I come to find out fairly soon, is going to be one of my all-time heroes, a man named Hugh Masekela, who is a jazz trumpeter and cornetist and also a master storyteller and folk singer, one of the giants of kind of Pan-African jazz and world music. So I was just thrilled to kind of accidentally be in the right place at the right time to see this festival, which I hadn't even known about that it was going to be part of the trip. So I feel like maybe things are starting to turn in the right direction for us. I relaxed a little bit, and Sue and Barbara, as you can imagine, needed to relax too. They were kind of tired from traveling, or maybe just tired of me. So they stayed back at the hotel, and I walked the 8 blocks or so down towards the town square. And I think I was there for, you know, the end of a previous act, and was there for all of Hugh Masekela's set. Well, actually, Sanborn would have been first. So I was there for all of Sanborn's set, who I'd also seen years before. And then I was there for the start and all of Hugh Masekela's. Some of you might recognize the song. This is called Grazing in the Grass, which was actually a number one hit on the radio on Billboard charts here in the United States around 1968. Back in those days, it was a little easier for an instrumental to kind of cross over onto the pop charts than it is nowadays. So I really so much enjoyed this performance and the whole atmosphere. It's a classic kind of large town square, and there are cafes and other things with awnings on all sides, and there's maybe, you know, 7,000 people, you know, 8,000 people all in this square. I think there may have been some chairs, but a lot of people were standing. I was kind of towards the back, half sitting, half standing on a fence, enjoying the show. And just the whole experience was really wonderful. I was in heaven. The weather was perfect, you know, because we're kind of halfway down from the Alps in a slightly cooler area, but still warm enough that it was quite comfortable. And I went back after the Hugh Masekela performance to the hotel. I'm going to get a good rest for the morning. We're going to have breakfast with Barbara, kind of a goodbye breakfast, and then we're going to go our separate ways. Sue and I are scheduled to get on a train to go down from Lugano to Milan, Italy, and Barbara's going to go back to Zurich. So that's what we end up doing, and believe it or not, we actually made it to that train and that train platform on time with no mishaps. So that was another encouraging sign. And four, my mindfulness and improvement, what am I rewarded with? Hugh Masekela is on the platform. And I was very excited by this. He was there with his band, and their next destination is going to be another festival in Germany. There are ways that all of Europe has embraced American jazz even more so than America has anymore. We kind of left it in the dust a little bit, but they still sort of keep it alive in several European countries, especially. So I was not the only person that recognized Mr. Masekela on the platform, but the other people were probably very, you know, like polite, reserved Swiss people, good citizens and everything else. So they were, you know, keeping a little bit of a distance. They were not the loud, boorish, celebrity-obsessed American that I am. So I just decided I'm not going to miss this opportunity to shake the hand of one of, you know, the heroes of my life. I had been a jazz DJ back in college, which is when I first discovered his music and the music of a lot of other kind of social justice warriors who were using music, even from the 1950s and into the 60s, to sort of make more than just a musical statement, to make political statements, to make change. And he had been banned by the South African Afrikaner white government from coming back to the country. He had come to America to study music and perform and everything else, but he was also seen as an agitator, so he had been banned for decades from coming back. The Afrikaner government eventually, around 1994, was forced out or voted out or quietly stepped down, thankfully. But during all those years, and even afterward, Hugh Masekela had been a powerful voice of protest against, you know, victims of war, against refugees. He had another fairly famous song about bringing Nelson Mandela back home. So he was a personal friend, and probably I'm having the opportunity to shake the hand of the man who shakes the hand regularly of Nelson Mandela, who was still alive at this point. So I was really, you know, just so pleased to talk with him a little bit. I said thank you because he had given such a great performance and it inspired me, you know, for much of my life. And he had also given a tribute from the stage the previous night for his ex-wife, a woman named Miriam Makeba, who was also a pretty big star worldwide in the 60s and even up into the 80s, working with the likes of Paul Simon when he was doing some of the Graceland and in the period right after that. And Miriam Makeba had just died the previous year. And at a certain point in history, for at least a decade, it was like Hugh Masekela and Miriam Makeba were like the Aretha Franklin and the Louis Armstrong of all of Africa, not just South Africa. I told him I had seen a concert that Miriam had done in the 90s, that she was doing a tour with Dizzy Gillespie. A trumpeter that I knew was going to be a hero to both he and myself. I'm not a trumpeter, but I am, as you can see, a little bit of a pretender at percussion and a few other instruments. So he was very gracious, and I told him that I had been demonstrating against apartheid in my youth when I was at university, and American investment in South Africa, including investment by my own university, kind of had our own version of the sit-ins, you know, not as widespread as what was going on in the 60s, but for me it was, you know, still a coming of age, very powerful experience to be involved in the kind of Free South Africa movement. And he, you know, he was just wonderful to take some time with me. I said, I'm really impressed that, you know, at, you know, whatever age you are, he was 68 or so at the time, that you're not just out on tour, but that you're doing it by train. And I'm sure it takes some stamina. And he says, man, if we don't tour, we don't eat. These European festivals are our bread and butter. And I just kind of laughed at that because I knew it to be true just from my own awareness of sort of the jazz scene, both in America and worldwide. So I wanted to extend the moment as long as possible, but I knew better. I kind of ended things and shook his hand again, and he got on his train going north. I got on ours, going south with my ex-wife, Sue, and we made our way down to Milan, Italy, which brings us to the automobile part of our story. From the train station, we go to get a vehicle at an agency where we had pre-booked a rental vehicle in Milan, and we were going to drive from Milan first down to Umbria in central Italy, and then eventually make our way to Rome. We get to the auto rental agency, and we find out fairly quickly that the only way they're going to rent us a vehicle is if we present a good credit card. I try to use my Discover card, only to be told that they're not going to accept it. Attention all U.S. travelers. Discover is useless in Europe. I'm not sure if that's still true, but it was at the time. So we were flummoxed. We did not know what to do, how we were going to be able to get a car. We had some cash. We had checks, but we didn't have any means of kind of securing payment in their mind. We went back to the hotel to sort of gather our senses and figure out what's next. And while we're at the hotel, we got into a conversation with a young American man who we find out was a serviceman. He was on leave from, I think he was probably a sergeant. I believe his name was Andrew, but by now I've kind of forgotten. I'm not sure anymore. But he was on leave from his base, which I'm pretty sure was in Germany. And he was just traveling a little bit and eventually was going to be bound back to America for a few months or something. So we engage Andrew, we explain our situation a little bit, and I feel almost as audacious proposing this as I did approaching Hugh Masekela. But I said, if you would take your credit card and come with us down to the agency, we'll be able to pay you and even give you an extra fee. You can make a little bit of extra cash for yourself just by helping out one of your fellow countrymen. And I promise we're not scamming you or anything else. We'll give you all the stateside information that you could possibly need. And we can pay you in dollars, we can pay you in euros, however you want to be paid, both that fee and the kind of insurance that whatever they might do to your card, you're not going to be left holding the bag. So in a moment of great heroism and citizenship and community, Andrew decides he's going to help us out. So we've got a taxi from the hotel back to the rental agency. We explained the whole situation at the rental agency, and they just want somebody that's going to be on the hook if anything goes wrong. They're fine with it. So we got ourselves that car, and we went back driving for the first time, in my case, in 6 days or something like that, you know, and just relieved to get this thing done. And you know, got a little bit of a rest that night in the hotel in Milan. Had a nice next day in the city of Milan. So it was a fine experience for us. And yet the next morning, we couldn't get out of there fast enough. You know, I was afraid that something else was going to go wrong. You know, tires squeal as we're getting on the road down to Umbria. We got down to Umbria with a little bit of help from GPS and had a little bit of a difficult time because it was a really rural sort of equestrian resort that we had booked for 4 or 5 days, a real genuine rest opportunity. Wasn't that easy to find, but once we were there, it was just gorgeous, and it's the only kind of inland province in Italy, but we did... I really enjoy it as a home base and went out to explore Tuscany a little bit and up towards Florence from there and over to Assisi, where another one of my all-time heroes, ancient hero, St. Francis, comes from. And it was just, a kind of a holy experience for me to be there. And for the most part, things went really well for the rest of the trip from that point on. We got... the rest that we needed. We had explained about the card coming the next day, and sure enough, DHL brings the card as planned the next day, and big sigh of relief, right? So, ultimately, I was just grateful, that I, took a plane for a date with history, took a train for a date apparently with destiny, and an automobile that, an American hero helped us get that taken care of.